Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Welcome to Hour 2 of Faith Radio Mornings here on the 30th of October. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault, producers for the program that bring such great guests like those that we heard from last hour, Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation, covering so much of the political scene out of Washington, D.C., as well as Dr. Hugh Welchel from the Institute of Faith, Work, and Economics, and talking with us a bit about how we can be people of faith and understand ourselves that way, regardless of the different circumstances in our lives and how that can help us in the midst of such volatility in our world. And we have another great guest here that often joins us on the program here on a Tuesday, and that is Dr. David Stevens, who is the Chief Executive Officer for the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And he comes on often to talk about medical and just different kinds of physician issues. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Peter. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing well, but I really do need your perspective on Halloween coming up here tomorrow. As a physician, as somebody who works with teeth as well, and tomorrow night as my five kids are out for Halloween, there's a pretty good chance, David, that I'm going to eat somewhere between 25 and 35 candy bars tomorrow night. Can you help me understand the impact that might have on my health across the board?
Well, it's not going to be a pretty picture, Peter. I hate to tell you this. The sugar rush is going to make you feel really good tomorrow night and really bad the next morning. The caries will be working into your teeth as you sleep tomorrow night, no matter how well you brush. I mean, there's a lot of things going on here, but enjoy it. It only happens once a year, and who would I be to say don't do it?
So is there, I mean, should I eat like natural or holistic kinds of chocolate? Would that help, or should I just go all in, you know, with high fructose corn syrup and some of these ingredients, David?
Yeah, I think that's what the vast majority of what you're going to find in that bag is. And so I think once you get started, it's going to be very difficult to stop. That's my own personal experience.
Well, I know you do quite a bit of work with medical missions too, David. And recently you had a trip to Israel. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we do a tour to Israel with a wonderful guide going to the biblical sites. It's really a worship experience. We weren't doing medical work, but it was all pretty much medical people. And, man, the Bible just comes alive when you're standing where, you know, the Mount of Transfiguration, where you're standing, where he fed the 5,000. I preached on the Sea of Galilee. I baptized people that want to be baptized in the Jordan River and communion in the Garden Tomb. It was just a marvelous experience that I would encourage a lot of people to put on their bucket list to get to the Holy Land sometime, because it makes the Bible come even more alive when you can actually picture where it happened and walk in Jesus' footsteps.
Yeah, it really does bring all of the sort of those stories from 2,000 years ago as if they're current again today, which they are. We're part of a kingdom that has no end. And boy, to be able to baptize people there and preach in the Holy Land, that's a sort of a forever kind of memory, isn't it?
It was. We had a pastor along with us and retired, and when we were doing the communion, I said, how would you like to join me doing this? And he just lit up because, you know, that would have been a dream of his for his whole career, and blessed time. And people grew in their faith and singing and new insights into God's word. It was just a marvelous time. And so, yeah, we do that, and we go to Greece to walk in the footsteps of Paul and those type of things. And it's been really moving for our members and something that's just kind of self-propagating, people going, telling other people, you got to do this. So I highly recommend it. And I know there's an expense involved, but it'd be something on your bucket list that would really be transformational in your life.
It's Dr. David Stevens. And David, when we come back from break, I'd love to get into some medical conversations of the day, including some changing positions on euthanasia in our country, as well as how to sort of sort through fraud within crowdfunding. And even some of, it sounds like there is some stem cell research coming out of Harvard where the research was debunked. So lots to get into with David Stevens next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of years without Christ. Now I want to understand.
Just about 10 minutes after the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and you've been hearing the voice already of Dr. David Stevens, who joins us regularly on Faith Radio Mornings to sort through some of the complex and interesting medical conversations of the day. And David, up first, I saw that the American Academy of Family Physicians, it has about 131,000 members, came out recently and voted to change a position on euthanasia that it can allow for it in some circumstances.
Yeah, this is tragic. And I think the thing people need to understand is these large professional organizations have been infiltrated with people with agendas. They don't represent the vast majority of healthcare professionals in the country. And that's true of the American Academy of Family Physicians. I resigned my membership when they took a position on same-sex marriage and endorsed it. In fact, I sat down for an hour and a half with the president-elect of the organization and said, what are you guys doing? And he said, well, you know, it's really not the issue. Just make sure people can get insurance. I said, if you want to make sure same-sex couples can get insurance, then let's do that. I have no problems with that, but to endorse same-sex marriage, but they went ahead and did it. And now they have engaged neutrality on physician-assisted suicide. In fact, they won't even call it that anymore. They're calling it medical aid in dying, which is a euphemism, making it sound like it's just regular end-of-life treatment, controlling symptoms and pain and that type of thing. So this is very deceptive. And what happens, Peter, when an organization like this one takes that stance, then that's used in court cases and legislative cases to get states to endorse this. So it's a huge issue. We have fought this for 25 years. They finally took this step. Unfortunately, it's going to be more and more common where you really can't trust your doctor, because how can you trust someone who can both cure you or kill you? And they have all the power of the knowledge to recommend which one.
Well, and already, David, I know that physicians are often forced to make decisions based on the insurance implications of it. Is that possible in this situation, that a doctor would give advice to say maybe you should shut everything down and really have it be not for the good of the patient and for the family, but really just for good, you know, good for the economics of it?
That is one of the most dangerous things, because the cheapest form of health care with a major disease is a handful of lethal pills. It costs, a few $100s versus tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars for advanced cancer therapy. So that's an issue. It destroys trust, which is the foundation of the doctor-patient relationship. It assumes all doctors are ideal moral agents at all times. They're not. I have doctors I go to. I have doctors I know that I wouldn't send my dog to. There's all kinds of people in healthcare, but anybody can do this no matter what their specialty. And this is going to cause legalization to spread across the country. Right now, it's being considered very seriously in New Jersey. Last year, there were attempts in 30 states to get it legalized. So this is of great concern. The next target is the American Medical Association. They're having a meeting in November. And we are very involved trying to fight that from them coming out with engaged neutrality. That's like being engaged neutrality on child abuse. I mean, on a topic like this, you can't be neutral. You're either for it or you're against it. And neutrality is just a cop-out.
And David, how do we balance then some of these economic concerns at end of life? I mean, I think some of the statistics are along the lines of 90% of healthcare is so much of the expense of it happens because of the last 6 months of life and intervention. And in situations where people maybe do have a terminal diagnosis, is there a way to balance both of these dimensions, the care for the patient and the desire to extend life, with some of the cost of it?
Yeah, I think we as Christians especially should be doing that, because we have hope. Death is not the end. It's the beginning. But the biggest problem in healthcare is it costs too much, and it's on a curve that's unsustainable. It's almost 20% of our gross national product. My wife's on a drug for her, one of her rheumatic diseases in her joints, and it's $50,000 a year for her drug. So you go, how can we charge that, number one? How can an insurance company afford to pay for it? How can I afford to pay for it if insurance can't? These are just huge issues that are facing all of us, and the big issues in healthcare in this country is not availability. Anybody can go to emergency room anytime they want and get care. It's the cost of healthcare, and we've got to deal with that.
Does the cost of it that it's upfront on some of these new breakthrough technologies and therapies, does that begin to moderate over time? Do we need to actually have to bear that cost on the front end for things to, we can learn about these diseases and treat them more effectively in the future?
Yeah, what happens is we do most of the research in the world on new drugs, and they're very expensive. If I found the cure for cancer tomorrow and got it approved by the FDA with all the studies and everything I have to do, the estimated cost is close to $1 billion. So there's a huge regulatory environment on the front end of this thing. And if we look at 100 different hope, you know, compounds that may have hope, and then we narrow that down through testing in animals, you come up with 10, then you go to clinical trials, and then you have stage 1, stage 2, stage 3 clinical trials, and getting approval from the Federal Drug Administration. And we need to protect patients, but we have created such a monstrosity of security on drugs that it's extremely expensive. And then other countries get them much cheaper. And that's why people get drugs out of Canada and other countries, because they can get the same drugs that they could get here in the U.S. for much less cost. So it's a complex environment. Big wholesalers control the prices and which hospitals are going to use what. And there's all sorts of issues. It's not a simple solution. But this administration is actually wading into it pretty aggressively, trying to deal with some of these issues. And I think we need to do that before it's too late and our medical system collapses.
Yeah, it certainly would be a winning political issue to be able to control the cost of some of the therapeutic drugs that are there. We're talking with Dr. David Stevens, who's CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association, about some of the medical issues of our day. David, when we come back from break, I would love to add to this conversation about paying for some of these therapies through the process of medical crowdfunding and what is happening there that can help support people, but some of the dangers of that as well. So more to come with David Stevens on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings, where we're having an always interesting and fun conversation with Dr. David Stevens, who's the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And David, we were talking before the break about just the soaring costs of health care and how to control this and what that means for end-of-life care. One of the things that's been really interesting over the last couple of years has been the growth of medical crowdfunding, in which people can solicit help, financial help, from people all around the country, even the world, actually, for their medical care. Talk us through what you're seeing in this.
Well, a new study just came out, and of course there's some tremendous blessings from this of people that have genuine needs, but it's also become an area of some fraud, and essentially therapies that are unproven, unpopular, stem cell therapies in particular. Everybody thinks stem cells can, you know, cure everything, and there are companies out there that say, oh yes, we've found this thing on stem cell therapy and it's this much money, now go do crowdfunding and come back and pay us for it. And these are unproven therapies. There's no clinical studies to show that they're effective. And so fraud is taking place, not only with stem cells, but homeopathy, naturopathy, hyperbaric oxygen for brain injuries, long-term antibiotics for Lyme disease, stem cell injuries. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. So I think the caution here is when you get a crowdfunding appeal is to really look into, before you make a decision, whether they are utilizing an effective therapy. All sorts of fraud are going on. There's a website called clinicalstudies.gov. It's a government site, and these companies will say, look, you know, the government has approved this. No, anybody, any company, any researcher, or even a doctor can go and put a study quote on that site. There's no checking whether they're valid. It's just a place to list studies. And just because something's there doesn't mean it's effective. So this has become a huge area of potential fraud and actual fraud. They looked at 1,000 studies and found over 400 of them were using unproven therapy and large amounts of money that these companies were essentially going to people desperate and getting them to do crowdfunding to support the companies that didn't have valid therapy.
So how does a person discern the validity of a therapy versus an experimental one that maybe is not approved yet by the FDA but could be usable in certain really difficult circumstances? Is there a way to tell, David, whether something is legit or whether it's fraudulent?
It's difficult. One of the things they're trying to do is get these funding sites, and there's more than just GoFundMe out there, to essentially put some safeguards in place that people reveal whether this is a proven therapy or not, and what exactly is going to be done. You know, there's often a very sad story that attracts people to give money on the site. But, I mean, millions of dollars are being put into some of these fraudulent things going on. So I think just beware, ask for more information. It's best if you know someone, you know what's happening with them, versus someone who may go on there and not even have a disease at all that's getting this money. And we're seeing reports of that in the news as well, that people use these things and make up stories. So that's another. And then, you know, there's one other thing, Peter, and that's just fraudulent studies out there. You know, you talk about, well, okay, if they've got a nice scientific article from the Journal of the American Medical Association, I can support that. Well, there's fraud going on in research as well. Harvard just came out along with Brigham Young Women's Hospital and said there was fraud in 31 publications by one of their scientists that worked at those institutions. And this is becoming an epidemic as well. We hear all the time, you know, don't eat butter, eat margarine, don't eat margarine, eat butter. I mean, you can go back and think of all the things where you've been told one thing's better than another, and then a number of years later, they reverse. And unfortunately, because of the competition for research funding, because of competition in academic institutions, you either publish or you perish as a faculty member. There's a push to get things in major journals, and there's only a few of those. And what's happening is a lot of fraud, even among scientists, where they are cooking up data to make their study look good, or it's being funded by a drug company that has an agenda, and there's a tremendous conflict of interest. So unfortunately, these things are penetrating medicine and causing great concern. Some of these journals now are being much more strict. You have to review your conflicts of interest and reveal those in your article. You have to quote the limitations of your study. They're wanting more complete data on how you did the research and all the results, not just selected results. So journals are fighting back against this, but it's also a problem in healthcare that some of the studies that we're dependent on as healthcare professionals to give us guidance are actually data that's been falsified.
Yeah, David, it's one of the more troubling dimensions of research is that at best there can be bias associated with it, and at worst there's outright fraud. But you make a great point, and I remember when I was working through my doctorate, there was moments in that doctorate where it was me and only me who knew what the research bore, and it was going to be up to my integrity to determine whether or not I would present that research or twist that research ever so slightly. And when you do, when you have your livelihood at stake, whether you want to be a professor or a physician, and it's all dependent on what the research shows, boy, there's a lot of conflict and interest that doesn't get talked about.
Yeah, and this fraudulent thing's happening in economics, social sciences, as well as in natural sciences. You're absolutely right, and you're in an academic community, and you know the pressure's there. And unfortunately, some people take the easy way out and try to justify it. And sometimes they're never found out, and sometimes there are, and their career's destroyed.
Are there ways, again, in which same sort of question about the medical crowdfunding, are there ways to be able to tell? Are there better peer-reviewed journals than others? If you have a medical issue, I think about the people out there that are much more empowered these days to look for information. They're not just dependent upon the family physician. Are there better or worse places to go if you're doing some of your own research into medical conditions?
Yeah, I would be asking through email to the crowdfunding person where the studies that show this is effective, and look at those, look to see if they're in major publications, not just listed on the government site as being a research project, which means nothing. And if they're getting this care overseas, one of the clues is that they're going to Nicaragua to get this, or they're going to Asia to get this treatment. That's because it's not approved here in the United States. Studies haven't taken place to show that it's effective and not dangerous. So those are clues to you that if someone's leaving the country to get this. But then there's some, the other thing that's happening at the federal level is trying to crack down on some of these, quote, stem cell therapy companies in the country, which are committing fraud because there's not data to show that what they're doing is effective and actually can be dangerous. For spinal cord injury, to do an injection in the spine of stem cells can be very dangerous. Anytime you take a needle and go into the spinal column around your spinal cord, it can be extremely dangerous. So, you know, just be careful if it involves you, and don't get desperate. Trust the Lord. Get a good physician to give you guidance, and then crowdfunding, be dubious unless you know the person, and then ask the appropriate questions.
Yeah, I think it's very helpful advice, and I think there's sort of that reinforcing feedback loop where if we have a medical issue, that we're going to look to the positive kinds of information that we get and maybe discard the negative. But to be fair and balanced and unbiased, to really take in both sides of it's very important.
It absolutely is. And realize we don't have an obligation to prolong our life at any cost. And we talked about the cost of healthcare. There's a time to say we've done what's reasonable, and it's time to die. And often people that get trapped into these type of fraud situations are just so desperate because of their disease that they'll be willing to believe anything, things they wouldn't have believed if they weren't so sick. So if you're a family member or the patient, just be careful because you sometimes aren't thinking clearly in these difficult situations.
Well, David, you didn't give me a lot of hope at the start of our segment that I could get by eating 25 to 35 candy bars tomorrow night. So I'm curious, as we wrap things up here, can I go to Starbucks later today and get the Witch's Brew Cream Frappuccino, 16 ounces, 390 calories, topped off with imaginary bat warts and lizard scales, and it tastes like an orangicle? Do you have any hope on this one, David?
I would use that as a chaser after the 25 candy bars tonight. See if it could reverse it. Maybe it could.
I love it. Thanks for joining us, bringing your wisdom and perspective and experience in all of these issues within medical and dental research.
Good to be with you, Peter.
We'll take a break here for Breakpoint and bottom of the hour news, and we'll be joined by Better Angels at the last part of our program here today and talk about some of the political rancor of our day and how we can carve out a different pathway forward. Some more to come on Faith Radio Mornings. Great reminder for Breakpoint this morning that disagreement does not have to lead automatically to hatred. There is obviously substantive disagreements on who Jesus was between Jews and Christians, but to see each other, to talk about things together, to work together, to love together is not something that our disagreements about the Messiah prevents us to do. We can, as Christians, shine a different kind of light in this world through love, and really appreciate that admonishment and encouragement from Breakpoint. It's part of the conversation we'll have with Better Angels organization next, who have worked really hard to figure out ways in which depolarize America. And boy, their perspective on these issues sure would be welcome this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Ruth Kramer of Mission Network News, and she was talking with us about violence against religious groups in other countries.
Yeah, there's mass shootings around the world. It doesn't always narrow in on just one community of faith, but frequently it does. Nigeria's Boko Haram insurgency has been one of those that has been extremely active since 2009, and we were watching the attacks go from kind of haphazard to suddenly organized and strategized, and we had to wonder, you know, where they were getting the training, who was actually funding this, and then it turns out that ISIS was actually behind it. So there was a period between 2009 and 2011 where a church was being attacked almost every Sunday, and it was massive kind of attacks. These are the kinds of things that the average believer in Middle East and North Africa will experience in areas where you're seeing that kind of pushback, where you're seeing the persecution of Christians on the rise to the point where, you know, Christians aren't really sure if they go to church, if they're going to come out alive.
Thought that was such an interesting conversation yesterday with Ruth Kramer, and sort of attuned, obviously, to the violence that happens in our country against people of faith and just in general, and to have her perspective that this is happening regularly around the world. We just don't see it in the news headlines. It really was an important conversation to think about how we can support our brothers and sisters in faith around the world through prayer, sometimes financial giving, sometimes even visiting the country to help. And if you want to catch that entire segment, you can go to myfaithradio.com, search for Ruth Kramer or Mission Network News, and you'll hear all of what Ruth had to share with us yesterday. Well, I see we're joined on the line by John Wood and Rob Robertson of Better Angels Ministry, and we're going to talk about how we can sort of bring some help and possibly some end to the polarization in our country politically and across the board.
Every family has a different story. No two kids are the same, and your journey through life will be uniquely wonderful and uniquely different. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Though every family I meet is special, I picked up a few universal lessons that apply to moms and dads everywhere. Here's one. You can choose to be loving even when you don't feel loving. Parenting isn't easy, and there will be times when you want to shut down and give up. But in those moments, you can decide to act apart from your feelings. I've learned that feelings will soon follow if, first, you love as an act of your will. So let that universal statement ring in your mind. Be loving, even when you don't feel loving.
Want to hear Mark in person? For a list of upcoming events, go to parentingtodaysteens.org.
About 19 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined on the line by John Wood and Rob Robertson of Better Angels. They're an organization that's seeking to bridge the partisan gap. Good morning, John. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Well, I can't imagine that you guys have anything to do day in and day out. I mean, everything seems so happy and peachy in our country. What do you guys possibly do all day?
Oh, Lord. Well, it's quite to the contrary, Peter. It's a busy time, as you might imagine. And, of course, we expected when we got into this work that there might be a lot to do. And, circumstances are unfortunately sort of proving us correct in that regard.
Do the two of you have any differences that you have to bridge? So you sort of have to model this internally before you're out doing the organizational work that you do?
that's a pretty good question. What do you think, Rob?
I think we definitely have differences, but John, you're a conservative. I'm a liberal. We've found a way to listen to each other. We've found a way to speak respectfully to each other. We have found a way to arrive at an accurate understanding of the stuff that we don't agree upon, and that has revealed that there's an awful lot we do agree upon.
That's right, and I think that at the core of that common agreement within Better Angels, not just between me and Rob, but really everybody in the leadership and the larger community of members and volunteers all across the country who work with us, is the idea that as committed as we may all be to our own particular political points of view, and many of us even work for partisan campaigns and so forth, but there's a more fundamental devotion to recognizing each other's common humanity and understanding that that is the basis of a flourishing civil society. And if we don't have that ethic underwriting our discourse, none of the political stuff really matters.
Well, it's so easy to reduce one another down to a position or an ideology and stop seeing each other as human beings. We had a physician on the program yesterday, Dr. Linda Mintel is her name, and she was talking a bit about the importance of empathy and walking at least a couple steps, if not a few miles, in another person's shoes. Is that something that you recommend as a way to sort of dial down the rhetoric and dial down the tension between us?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, it goes back to that old gospel wisdom. Don't try and remove the speck from another's eye before you've removed the plank from your own. And the truth is that you really cannot. I mean, you can sort of think that you have an understanding of what somebody else's ideological position may be, but you really don't understand the roots of that person's perspective unless you have some insight and go out of your way to have some insight to what the nature of that person's experience might be that has led them to a particular perspective. So Better Angels workshops, the working groups that we conduct across the country, where we bring small groups of conservatives and liberals, or reds and blues, as we say, into a shared space to sort of not debate or argue about politics, but to discuss their different experiences and so forth. We give people the opportunity to do just that, to learn about people's real experiences behind the political label, so they can get a sense of who the true human being is underneath the caricatures that we see portrayed in the media and partisan politics, et cetera. And that, as Rob mentioned, opens the window for a whole new universe of understanding and even collaboration in local communities and beyond that. But you have to have empathy to make that work. And empathy is activated when we get a sense of what the other person's real experiences are, because normally we can see something of ourselves and the experiences and what we've been through in the experiences of another.
Rob, I'd be curious, give us a little bit more sense of what happens in these workshops that you do have around the country. It sounds like you get together seven conservative-leaning participants, seven progressive-leaning participants, and you moderate some discussions and some of the disagreements. It's an entire workshop. What is a day like, or what is a workshop like for Better Angels?
So first I want to tell you that we had 10 workshops throughout the country last weekend, 8 on Saturday, 2 on Sunday. We had some skills workshops, which are teaching and role play practice, and we had some day-long and half-day red-blue workshops. The day-long red-blue workshop, I think, is our signature piece. Seven reds and seven blues come together. There can be up to 15 observers. They do four highly structured exercises. In the first, they look at stereotypes. In the second, they listen to each group talk about itself, both the strengths of the policies and values and the weaknesses that that group perceives of their own policies and values. Then each group has an opportunity to develop four questions of curiosity that they'd like to ask to the other group. And so interaction occurs around those questions, and it's a direct question-answer interaction. And then folks talk about what they can do individually and together with the folks from their side and together with their side and the folks from the other side. Then at the end of the workshop, we encourage people to consider joining together to form a red-blue alliance to continue to meet together and work together in their own community to decrease polarization and to learn more about each other.
Are people sort of reticent to get involved in maybe the discussion at first in your workshops, and they sort of learn that maybe this is a place where they can become a little bit more vulnerable with their views, but at first do you experience some reticence among them?
When we watch people walk into the workshop, I am seeing people who I imagine are thinking, why did I decide to come here today? they seem uncertain and unsure. And within half an hour to an hour, the room is full of laughter. People seem reticent, but yet these are folks who showed up anyway, even though they had some misgivings about what might happen. And at the end of the day, they're telling us that they feel as though they've got a better understanding of the folks on the other side and that they're not stereotyping them as much and that they have trust in their good intentions, that they believe the people on the other side have good intentions for people in our country, and that the thing that amazes me is they tell us that they feel that they're not as far apart as they have been led to believe they are. And that's a remarkable outcome to happen every time.
Yeah, that is absolutely fascinating, because I do think there are forces at work that divide far more than bring together. We're talking with John Wood and Rob Robertson of Better Angels, an organization that helps bring us together. When we come back from break, you two, I would love to get your perspective on how a listener could get involved in one of these workshops, as well as what we can do if we experience some divisions, maybe in our families or between husband and wife, with our children, anything along those lines in these political conversations. So a lot more to come with John Wood and Rob Robertson of Better Angels. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're having a conversation with John Wood and Rob Robertson of Better Angels organization. And John and Rob, I'd be curious, as you are just with people in average regular life, are people less polarized than what the news and the government tends to make us out to be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in general, I think that is the case. But having said that, it's certainly true that the polarization that we see as being so endemic in our politics, in our media culture, and so forth, I mean, it definitely seeps into people's day-to-day lives in a real way. I mean, if it didn't, there wouldn't be such a need for Better Angels, and you might not even see some of the terrible things we've witnessed recently. So these things have an effect, and I think that, you know, part of what is pushing people in the direction of looking for alternative ways of engaging politics is that they are finding that it's more difficult for them to have those dinner table conversations with relatives of a different perspective. It's harder for them to bring the family together for the holidays or to engage a coworker or a colleague over some talk about an election or a certain political issue or social issue, because you just don't know where it might go. And there's all sorts of risks that people want to avoid and all sorts of emotions that people don't want to risk triggering. And it's a terrible thing, because our civic society can't really flourish the way it ought to unless people feel free to openly discuss their differences of opinions. But to do that well, of course, we've got to have some charity for the fact that there are going to be differences in the first place. So, the media overhypes it in many respects, but on the other hand, in overhyping it, they kind of makes it easier for that discord to become real, and that's something we got to counteract.
I'd be curious too, then, as we are approaching the Thanksgiving holiday, and certainly there's going to be plenty of families around that Thanksgiving Day table that are going to have different views. If somebody says the name President Trump, and all of a sudden the tension level increases, and people wonder where to go next, do you recommend that, or how do you suggest people proceed? Do you just sort of change the conversation? Do you dive into it? Does it depend on the family?
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, what I would say is that the big problem, whether it's a discussion about Trump in particular or any other contentious thing, one of the big things we miss when having personal conversations around politics is we forget that humility is just a real necessary lubricant to a healthy conversation on political and social issues. And one way that manifests itself is when you're having these conversations at the dinner table, if somebody brings up Trump or something like that, if you want to engage, and if you don't want to engage, that's totally fine. But sometimes you would like to phrase things in a way that doesn't make every one of your opinions sound like a fact just because you got it from cable news or talk radio. I mean, if you heard Peter Kastner say it, then
of course, absolute truth at that moment.
Yeah, right, exactly. But otherwise, say things in terms of make them – we teach people to use I statements frequently. My understanding of this issue is that certain healthcare policy – helps people get more coverage. Or, my feeling about this individual is that the way he speaks makes it harder for us to get along. Or he's out there telling the truth. But by prefacing your comments with, this is my feeling, this is my perspective, this is my point of view, it may be the case that you're just 100% right in what you're saying. But if you state it like, this is the way it is, this person is a bad guy, this policy works, my idea is right, your idea is wrong, you immediately put people on the defensive, even people that you know very well. And so by summoning some humility in the way we frame our political points, you invite other people to feel safe in expressing their own points of view as well. And that's what lubricates a healthier dialogue.
Yeah, I think it's so important. And well said, humility. We talk in my class at times, in my theology classes, that my theology is written in pencil. So much of it is, some of it's written in blood, some of it in very dark pencil. But to have a humility that, maybe that could be actually wrong on a few different things. That's a big part of the equation for some healing. We got just about a minute left, you two. If people want to get involved in one of the workshops, maybe aren't local or where some of they're being held face to face, how can they get involved?
So I'd like to invite folks in the Northeast. I understand you broadcast out of Hartford.
Yeah.
I live about an hour north of there, and we're trying to get a lot of things going on in Massachusetts and Connecticut, and folks throughout the country to go to our website, www.better-angels.org, better-angels.org, and you can learn about us there. You can connect with local leadership in our various states to find out more about workshops. And we welcome your interest, and we'd love to see folks get involved.
Well, we love the work that the two of you are doing and the entire Better Angels organization, just really shining a light in the midst of all of this, that there can be a different pathway forward in our relationships and in our dialogue.
Indeed. Well, thank you so much, Peter. God bless you and your audience. And we really appreciate the opportunity to come on and share our mission.
I love it. Well, have a great rest of the week, you too. And we'll look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks. All right,
likewise. You take care.
We'll take a break here and wrap up our show for the day here on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, there is indeed light in this world. I'm so appreciative of the kind of work that John Wood and Rob Robertson are doing, where they're taking it upon themselves to help us bridge some of these gaps that so often we seem to be driven apart by the news cycle and by different politicians looking to divide and therefore get the vote and head into power. So very grateful for their ministry. Grateful to David Stevens and to all of you as listeners, keeping our eyes focused on Jesus as we walk out our life together. We'll do that again tomorrow on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.